Shalom, everyone. Welcome to our new set of classes called Tanya Definitions. What we're going to try and do is basically define all the concepts in Tanya, in the Holy Sefer Tanya. I'm just going to start with a little story to give you a. I'm going to start with a little story. So I've been learning from Manus Friedman for the past 15 to 18. Probably 18 years. Yeah, I'm a Talmud Muvak of Rav Manus Friedman. I've spent thousands and thousands of hours listening to him. Until about probably 3 months ago, I'd never met him, physically met him. We have a kesher over Zoom and we speak over Zoom occasionally, but I'd never physically met him. So, long story short, I went with my son to Jerusalem when he to the old city when I heard he was on a Shabbaton. Nothing arranged, and Lamaisa, we ended up meeting him, and I gave him a hug. He gave me a hug. We sat down. He held my hand. It was very deep moment. And he said to me, "No, you have a chiddush," and usually I got chiddushim like pouring out, and I was like. Couldn't think of anything to say. And I was like, do you have like something a little more specific, like that I could give you a chiddush in? And then I thought that would like spark a memory. Anyway, so something came to mind, I said it. And then he turned around to me and said something really interesting. He said to me, after I said that to him, he said that he was on the aeroplane flying to from the States to Israel. And El Al have got there now, like they've I don't know, they got frum basically. So El Al have got now a kosher channel on the TV. And he said he was watching a Torah shiur of a Sephardi rabbi who was giving a shiur about segulas. And he was talking that this is a segula, that's not a segula, this works, that doesn't work, etc. He said by the end of the whole shiur, he said it was like 50 minute shiur, he said the man had not given a definition of what is a segula. It's crazy. The man just had not given a definition of what is a segula. And that was it. That's what he said to me. And I was, that's interesting. Oh, Sean Daniel.
Shout
And so I was with my son and I like, we hugged and I kissed his hand and we went off back home. And I'm, whatever. So I just didn't think much of that. The only time I've ever met my Rebbe physically, he said this very random thing to me, and it was like, okay. So anyway, that was on the Shabbos. On the Tuesday, I feel the Monday, I managed to get back to my writing project that I've been thoroughly uninspired by. It'd been dragging out for like a couple of years. And I'm sitting there writing, and I realize, what am I writing? I'm writing defining Tanya. I'm in the middle of what I was writing when he told me this was definitions of Tanya that I'd been working on for like 2 years, and it was such a kind of drawn out project. I had no chizuk in it, no, it was so technical and whatever, and I just couldn't find the chizuk to like to do it. And then I realized, well, my Rebbe just told me this is what I have to do. So I busted it for about 2, 3 weeks, and I finished it. We're waiting for Gavriel said he's going to go through it and edit it. But we've got in the meantime, I've ended up with a 60-page booklet where we've gone through everything from Aleph, which is Ivrin de Malka, to Taf, which is Tshuva Tatar, yeah, which is Mamash. So hopefully this will be very, very enlightening for us. Okay, the irony is that we begin with Aleph, and we're learning the first of all the concepts is Ivrin de Malka, Aleph base Reish Yud Nun. Yeah, that's why it's the first concept. It's one of the most difficult concepts in Tanya. So that's it. We're going to jump in and hold on to your seats. And you need to give 100% attention because this is a very, very nuanced idea. And what I've actually done is I've created a kind of, if you can see, It says, see, it says the three exclamation marks indicate that this concept is exceptionally deep, subtle, and slash or complex. It may require extra focus and possibly several readings to grasp. And the first thing here you see is the three exclamation marks. So this concept, Ivrin de Malca, is deep, subtle, and complex. Okay. So let's jump in. Ivrin de Malca, meaning the limbs of the king, is how the Tanya refers to Hashem's relationship to the mitzvahs. Torah is called Kudsha Bricho Raisa Kuluchad, that Hashem and the Torah is one. Yeah, we'll talk about that another time as well, Hashem. But Ivrin de Malca, the limbs of the king, is how the Tanya refers to mitzvahs. So, what is the relationship between us and our limbs? Because we're not our limbs. A man can lose a hand or an arm, and he'll still be the same. He's the person isn't. He's just lost an arm. It's not that he is his limbs. So the concept of the limbs is that the relationship between Hashem and the mitzvahs, the actual physical mitzvahs, is like a vessel. It's called a chariot. Yeah. The actual mitzvah, see, the Ratzon Hashem, Hashem has a Ratzon. He has a desire. His desire for mitzvahs, that we've said many times in the past, his desire for mitzvahs is comparable to our desire to live. Meaning we have no reason why we want to live. Our desire to live is not predicated on some kind of logical reason. So if you say to somebody, why do you want to live? He might come up with some reasons, but the truth is that his desire to live precedes all reasons, and he then attaches reasons to his desire to live. But it's not predicated on any reason. It's a Ratzon. Ratzon is beyond logic. It's Lamala mina logic. So Hashem's desire for mitzvahs is not logical. Logic got created after the mitzvahs. His desire for mitzvahs, you could say, is essential. Like our desire for life is essential, meaning it's from our essence. What would that be comparable to? Would be the light of the sun. The light of the sun, if you ask the sun, why do you shine? He wouldn't be able to say, I shine because. He would say, well, I'm the sun. That's what I do. Meaning it's reason. There's no reason why I'm shining. It's essential. It comes from my essence. I am bright and therefore I shine. It's not that I want to shine. It's not that I get me I shine, etc., etc. It's an essential thing. That's the concept of our desire to live. Our desire to live is just like the sun shines, we long to live. Okay? Now that could be compared to the limbs. The limbs, your limbs are, so to speak, an extension of you. And you are in your limbs. So now it comes out that when you do a mitzvah, why did Hashem create the world? First Rashi in the Chumash. Bishvil Torah, Bishvil Yisrael. The reason why Hashem created the world was so that Yidden can do mitzvahs. And the whole world is there to help the Yidden do mitzvahs, all to differing levels. But the point of the world is that Jews can do mitzvahs. So, how important is the world? The world is as important as the mitzvahs, because without the world, you couldn't do mitzvahs. But Hashem doesn't want the world for itself. He wants the world because he wants mitzvahs. He has a mitzvah of tefillin. So without cows and grass and sun to grow the grass to feed the cows, etc., there couldn't be to fill in. So does he want cows and grass and sun? I mean, yeah, but not really. He really wants the mitzvah to fill in. So he's created cows and grass and sun. So what motivated the creation of cows and grass and sun is his desire for the mitzvah. So now we're saying that that desire for the mitzvah, now he doesn't actually want cows and grass and sun. He wants the black boxes with the correct parshias, with the Jewish arm and the Jewish energy at the right time in the right place. That's what he really wants. So that's the actual Ratzon Hashem. The Ratzon Hashem is when my arm at the right time of the day in the right place is wearing kosher tefillin, and I pull the tefillin, I say, and I wrap the tefillin around my arm. That's really what Hashem wants. That is called that's the Ivrin de Malka, meaning that is now a kli, a vessel that is containing the Ratzon Hashem. The Ratzon Hashem is contained within that action of putting on tefillin in the right time and place, etc. When all the requirements are made and we fulfill the actual requirement of the mitzvah of tefillin, Hashem is present there in that act. His Ratzon is present in that act, just like your Ratzon is present in your body. The reason why you go like this, the reason why you can move your hand, yeah, is not because of some kind of physiological, electrical impulse that's going on. That might be the way it actually happens, but your hand is being moved by your will, by your Ratzon. You want to move your finger moves. You want to walk to the shop, your feet start to move. It's your will that effortlessly moves your limbs if you're healthy. A normal, healthy person, there is no interposition. Is that that's not the right word? Is that what you're saying? There's no break. There's no kind of disconnect between the movements of his body and his Ratzon. This is the exact expression of my will. Just like when I'm putting on tefillin and all the requirements of Shulchan Aruch are met, it's exactly the same idea. That's this world, so to speak, moving in relation to Hashem's Ratzon. Now, what's the difference between my Ratzon and my body and Hashem's Ratzon and his mitzvahs? There's one very, very big difference. Gabriel, you can think of the difference.
Hashem and his Ratzon are one.
We're us and our Ratzon are one. The difference between my Ratzon and my body and Hashem's Ratzon and his mitzvahs,
He needs us to do it.
yes, is that he, in his ultimate humility, entrusted the nation of Israel with the s'chus of being the ones to perform his Ratzon.
So mitzvahs are malchus, Hashem's expression.
Yes.
But we are the ones that bring that about.
That means he was miyached his malchus with us. That's what that means.
It's interesting because I have a Ratzon to do something good, but I have a Nefesh HaBahamas that pulls me in a different direction that prevents my Ratzon from coming out into Hezgalus. And that's the exact same thing that prevents Hashem's Ratzon from coming out.
Me Duke. Yes, that's beautiful. Well said. Exactly. It's Al Nefesh Abraham, it's Al Yetzer Hara that prevents Hashem's mitzvahs from being performed. So it comes out like this. When you're doing a mitzvah, yeah, there's a subtle chatzitza. How's the chatzitza? Barrier is not a nice word. A better word than barrier.
Separation.
A subtle. I'll tell you a story with Rav Shimshon Pinchas. Yeah, when he became the Rav in Ofakim, and it was basically a completely secular place. And he's a big, big chassid, a big tzaddik. And he one of the first things he wanted to do was put a mechitza in the shul. So they came to him, and the kehila came to him and said, "Rebbe, if you put a mechitza in the shul, no women are going to come." And his response was, "What are you talking about? The mechitza allows the women to come. If it wasn't for the mechitza, the women couldn't come. So the mechitza allows them to come. So this is, in a sense, this is the idea. A mechitza really is paradoxical, but the right kind of mechitza actually is mechaber. It brings things together that couldn't come together otherwise. That's a very important idea. Bechlal, that's a big idea. We're going to talk about that right now. But anyway, so when it comes to doing a mitzvah, yeah, you're actually holding on to the physicality of this world. For example, you take a lulav and esrog, yeah? The actual flesh of the esrog and the material of the lulav are not, they are, so to speak, a byproduct necessary for the mitzvah to take place. So in a sense, there's a subtle separation, or a subtle interposition. I can't think, there's a word like interposition or something like that. Can't think of the word. Anyone can Google that word for me? Interposition or something like that. Anyway, there's a subtle barrier. There's a subtle chatzitza, that's the word. There's a subtle chatzitza between me and the actual mitzvah. What's that chatzitza? Is the actual physicality of the object that I'm using. So that physicality, the physicality of the object, allows me to come close to the Ratzon Hashem, Mitzad Echad. Mitzad Sheni, I have to be careful that I see through the physicality of this world to the Ratzon Hashem. Just like when you hug someone, yeah? You're not hugging their body. I mean, you are hugging their body, but you're hugging them. You're hugging the abstract being that's contained within the body. Yeah? Interposition. Thank you, Mesh. Interposition. That was the word. Yeah, interposing. Interposition. So when we're doing the mitzvah, there's a very subtle danger that you could not be seeing through the actual physicality of the mitzvah. And that's this idea of the chatzitza, of the interposition, that the chatzitza, the flesh of the Arba Minim, connects you to the Ratzon Hashem. But you are connected to the Ratzon Hashem. You are not one with the Ratzon Hashem. People with me? So it's like this. Doing a mitzvah is comparable to driving your car. Meaning, actually, doing a mitzvah is comparable to you being the car and Hashem driving you. Meaning, you become a chariot for God. And everything else does as well, not just you, including your ability to do the act, but all of the physicality of the world as well. That all becomes an agendaless, transparent chariot vehicle for God. Whereas learning Torah, there's an actual merging of the two. So there's the idea of being a receptacle, being a vessel for God. And then there's the idea of merging with God. So mitzvahs are called the Ivrin d'Malka, the limbs of the king. And just like your Ratzon Yeshua rests within your limbs, so too the Rabbeinu Shlomo's Ratzon rests within the actual act of the mitzvah. But there's a deeper connection when we learn Torah, because when you learn Torah, you and Hashem actually merge with each other. We're going to discuss that when we get to that, Bezrat Hashem. But that's the concept of the limbs of the king. That the limbs of the kings is sh the limb, the limb, the idea of the Ivrin de Malka is describing to us just how close Hashem is to the mitzvahs. But at the same time, it explains that there's a subtle, not from the mitzvahs, from the act of the mitzvahs, but there's a subtle separation, a subtle distinction at the same time. Just like your limbs are completely nullified to you, but at the same time, they're not you. The actual limbs themselves, and you could actually lose a limb, chas v'shalom. That's the actual act of the mitzvah. That's the Ivrin de Malka. Has anyone got that clear? Does anyone want to say that back? This is one of the most difficult concepts in Tanya to up. So, but it really is. Do people understand what we just said? Keep it a thumbs up if you understood.
What part is so hard that you think we didn't get?
No, I don't know if you didn't get it. I'm just it's a subtle concept that there's a that the that the actual act of the mitzvah, the actual physical act of the mitzvah, meaning the coming together of all of the stipulations of the mitzvah, of all the tannaim of the mitzvah, meaning it needs to be in the right place at the right time with the right chomer, with the right ingredients, so to speak. When all the ingredients come together, yeah, that is called that is comparable to the limbs of the king, meaning that is the expression of Hashem's inner Ratzon, his true Ratzon, being expressed through the things of this world. That's really what he wants. So there's a distinction between you and your limbs and you yourself. Because
Hashem needs us to do that, and that gives him oneg, that gives Hashem satisfaction when we do that.
that's a different point. That's true, I think, but not this isn't what we're saying here. We're talking about his relationship to the mitzvahs, not in his desire for the mitzvahs, yeah. Because he desires mitzvahs, but the actual relationship, like for example, if you want to eat ice cream, yeah, you really want the pleasure of the ice cream, yeah, but you have to go through the process of the eating. Or let's say you want the energy from the ice cream. It's better. That makes a more you want energy, so you eat food. So there's a separation between you and the act of the eating the food and your desire for the energy is expressing itself in your act of eating the food. You with me? So
Hey.
that's your desire. Your desire is expressed in a physical act of eating food. That's exactly the same with the mitzvahs. Hashem's desire, he doesn't want the mitzvahs for energy. He wants the mitzvahs for the pleasure. It'd be better talking about ice cream, that you're eating the ice cream for the pleasure of the ice cream. But you can't separate the eating of the ice cream and the pleasure. It's one and the same thing. Yeah? You can't have the pleasure of eating ice cream without eating ice cream. It's different to wanting the energy from the ice cream. If you want the energy from the ice cream, the energy comes later. But the actual pleasure is the eating of the ice cream. So too with the mitzvahs, that's really what Hashem wants. He wants the mitzvahs being performed. So the act of the eating the ice cream is something external to you. It's very close to you, but it's still something external to you. So the act of the mitzvah is something external to him, but it's the closest external thing there is.
That they can get.
It's the closest external thing there is to him, just like your body is the closest external thing to you. You are not your body. It's something other than you, but you are in your body, so to speak. You're bound up in your body. You're contained within your body. Your will is contained within the body. So too, Hashem's relationship to the mitzvahs, that it is the closest thing to him, but it's not actually him.
Him.
The actual
Right.
act of the mitzvah, because he wants the pleasure, like you said, actually, he wants the pleasure of the mitzvah, just like the eating of the ice cream, you can't separate from the pleasure of the ice cream. So too with the act of the mitzvah. So he wants the mitzvah unto itself, but the actual act of the mitzvah is
Yes, me.
something separate from him.
No. Okay.
Okay, that's literally one of the most subtle, complex subjects in Tanya. So we'll move on now. So we've got before we with the next topic is Avos Hashem, okay? So before that, I listed a bunch of loves. There's Ahava B'Tanugim, Ahava Mesuseres, Ahava Mesuseres B'Moicha V'Ta'alu Mois Liboi, Ahava Azaku Ish B'Eis, Ahava Rabba. But these all come under so there's a sub there's a there's a subtitle Avos Hashem, or sorry, an overriding title Avos Hashem. And then we've got all the different loves inside Ahavas Hashem. So let's try and discuss four kinds of loves that create a matrix that will explain to us the whole concept of love in Tanya. This is really quite amazing, Bezrat Hashem. So Ahava, the basic understanding of what love is, according to the Tanya, is that it is a attraction towards fear, yira. Is a repulsion away. Repulsion is not the right word because it sounds like it's repulsive. It means the opposite of an attraction. Yeah. Not what is there an opposite of attraction to other than to repulse? Think there's like a more happy word than repulse.
Repel.
Repel. Thank you. There you go. That's the word. Yeah. So repel. So love draws near. In fact, the truth is love actually, it's not that it wants to bring itself closer. Love actually, to get very granular, love wants to bring into it. So it's actually beautifully analogized by the concept of a kiss. The actual idea of a kiss is actually a little suck. What you're doing is you're bringing in. That's what love really is not that you're trying to move towards, it's you're trying to bring to you. And the opposite would be like to spit, which would be to push away from you. Anyway, so love is really a drawing near. It's a desire for closeness. That's probably the most simple way of explaining love, a desire for closeness. So now we've got two loves and we've got really four loves, okay? So the Rebbe speaks of what's called Ahava Rabba and Ahavas Olam. Okay, I want to put out my incense. Okay, so Ahava Rabba is sort of spoken of as probably the highest kind of. I don't want to talk about what's higher and lower and bigger and smaller. I just want to try and give you the ideas of what these loves represent because it's really amazing. We have Ahava Rabba, which is a love that comes from above, meaning you don't generate that love. It's a gift from God. Then you've got Ahavas Olam, which is the exact opposite thing, which is a love that you generate yourself through thinking about the right things. The way we come to love things, the way you come to usually get scared of things is or become anxious by things or become depressed by things is through thinking, through meditation. Yeah, not stilling the mind meditation, but through positive thinking. So we've got these two. They're basically describing the source of the love. Okay, so love either comes from from above, so to speak. It's a gift. Or you do the right avoiders that generate that love. Avarabba is the love that comes from above. It's a gift from God. And Avas Oilam is the kind of love that the Rambam speaks about, that everyone speaks about, that is the kind of love that comes from my own intentional thinking. Okay? So this is comparable to the love of a sister and the love of a wife. The four loves we're going to talk about now, we've spoken about two. Avarabba is comparable. Now, don't get caught up in this. It's just a tool to understand it. Yeah, the love that's called Avarabba that comes as a gift from above is comparable to the love of a man and his sister. The love Avas Oilam is comparable of the love is comparable to the love of a man to his wife. Okay. And then we're going to talk about the next two loves, which is called Kobora, which means like a son, and Nafshi Yivisicha, which means my soul desires you at night, which will be comparable to the love of a man and his father and a man and his child. So this is the matrix. It's unbelievable when we could spend a lot of time talking about this. We'll try and get it clear, but that the four kinds of love are analogized. Again, don't get caught up in the moshel. It's just pulling, and each one of these relationships has all the kinds of loves. We're just picking on little points to help us remember the ideas. So there's the love that a man has towards his sister. There's a love that a man has towards his wife. Then there's a love that a man has towards his father, and there's a love that a man has towards his son. Okay, these four, this it creates a matrix, and this basically creates a framework for where all loves exist. Okay, so the love for a man and his sister is comparable to like a gift from God, meaning you didn't do anything for that love with your sister. You and your sister are one and the same. Yeah, and don't get into if you don't love your sister or whatever it is, yeah. But the concept is that you and your sister are the same. And this is, by the way, what was Meramez to Avraham and Yitzhak, referring to Sarah and Rivka, respectively, as their sister, is this is the, in a sense, the deepest kind of love, where that was the level of love that they attained, the love between a man and his sister, which is really the love between Ze'anpin and Nukva, the love between Zoyin, but we're not going to get into that. They're brother and sister. The sister that your love for your sister is because you are one and the same, mamash. There's no one else in the world that you're the same as, maybe your brother, you could say, but there's no one who you're more like than one of your siblings. Yeah. So how did that happen? That's just how it is. That's how God did it. That's comparable to the Avarabba. Yeah. And that is a love that includes pleasure. Love is not pleasurable. The expression of the love is pleasurable. A man loves his child dearly. Yeah? That is not pleasurable. Loving your child dearly is not pleasurable. Being with your child who you love dearly, or doing for your child who you love dearly, or speaking with your child who you love dearly, or even thinking about your child who you love dearly. Yeah? Those are all behaviors. That's where the pleasure of the love is. But the love itself is not a pleasure. What's the proof of that? Because that man who loves his child dearly, and when he's sitting with him, is in, seventh heaven. That same man, if he's in jail and he's being prevented from being with his son, that love will become a tremendous pain. So love is not pleasurable. The expression of love through behavior is pleasurable, very pleasurable. But the love itself is not pleasurable. But this love, Avarabba, is actually a love that is pleasurable. Meaning the actual feeling of the love itself is a pleasure. It's a very, very high love. It's connected to Olam Atzilus, and it's because you're one with it, and it's a really a pleasure of yourself. And there's lots of things to speak about that, but we're not going to go too deep into it. Okay, so that's called Avarabba, and it's also called, anybody know what Avarabba is also called? Surprisingly enough, after what you just said. Avapatanugim, synonymous. The love of pleasure and the great love, they are the same thing. And that's why it's called a love of pleasure, because it actually contains pleasure. Where Avas Oilam doesn't contain pleasure. The pleasure of Avas Oilam is the expression of that love. But the actual love itself is not, it's not pleasurable and it's not painful. If it gets to express itself, it's pleasurable. If it doesn't get to express it, say, express itself, it's painful. So in itself, it's not connected to pleasure or pain. So Avarabba and Avas Oilam are demonstrating the source of the love. There's other things as well, but the Ikkar, the matrix that we're trying to understand is that is describing the source of the love. Yeah, everyone's clear on that. That's not difficult, yeah? So Avarabba comes from God, so that's just out of our control, like our relationship with our sister. And Avas Oilam comes from whatever we need to think about, we think about, yeah, that's comparable to our love for our wife, which isn't a given, and that's something that we have to work on. We have to work on our love for our wife. We have to think about the right things to come to a love of our wife. Okay, so that's Avas Oilam and Avarabba. That's defining the source of the love. Now we've got two other loves, which is called Kabbara. It's really Kabbara, the Shtadel Achwe Ava Ve'imoy, like a son who loves his mother and father. And then Nafshi Ivisicha B'Leilois. And I, like, my soul desires you in the night. And what these two loves are referring to is the selflessness of the love. So we've got Avarabba and Avas Oilam, which are describing the source of the love. Then we've got Naf Kabbara, like the sun, and Nafshi Visicha, my soul desires you, which is describing the selflessness of the love. Okay? So the sun, the love like a sun, is a selfless love. It's really funny because I always learned it the opposite. You think that the parent loves the child more than the child loves the parent. But it's actually, that's not correct. According to the way I understand Tanya, the way that I've learned, the way that Romanus just explains Tanya, the way that I understand how Romanus explains Tanya, is that the love that the child has for the parent is much more selfless than the love that the parent has for the child, which sounds a bit wacky, but we'll explain because it's really it's very reasonable. When we're talking about the love of the child for the parent, don't think about a little kid. Think about a fully grown adult, a 60-year-old man looking after his 80-year-old father, or even a 70-year-old man looking after his 90-year-old father. Think of that. Don't think about a little kid and his 25-year-old dad. Okay? We're talking about the pinnacle of the relationship, which is expressed in the act, we shouldn't know about it, of the adult child nursing his sick parent to death. That is the ultimate expression of selfless love. The adult child nursing the elderly parent, the sick elderly parent to the end. That is very different to your relationship with your children. You want your children to be gewaldig. You live on through your children. It doesn't mean that you're like conniving and it's like vicarious living, but your children are an expression of you. Just like when your child does something really bad, the other day, one of my kids was causing big balagan in cheder. Yeah, he's really disrupting the class, and the teacher called me in, and the Rebbe called me in, and I had to deal with it. And I was very upset. It was like, my son is causing trouble in his cheder. He's causing, he's preventing other children from learning, etc. Yeah, that's my son. I'm responsible in a sense. Yeah. So your the way that you deal with your children is actually, it's not fair to call it selfish. It's because that's it's not selfish, but it's self. They are a continuation of you. So you can wait, and this is why it's called my soul longs for you in the night, meaning I wake up in the night. You can wake up for your children in the middle of the night, because it's like waking up for yourself in the middle of the night. Again, don't actually think about how it is lemaisa, because there's other things getting in the way, but just to understand the concept. So nafshi ivisicha is the love that you have for your child, and the love that a man has for his son, and that is a self-love that is incredibly powerful and dynamic and can get you to do stuff. It's motivating. A man's love for his parent, which is called kibbora, like a son, yeah, although that is utterly selfless, it's not an intense, motivating love. It's a selfless love, an absolutely selfless love, but it's not an intensely motivating love. So we have this matrix where we have on each extremity, we have where does it come from? Is it a gift from God or is it self-generated? And then we have, is it selfless or self? Again, I don't want to say selfish because that's not correct, but is it a love of self or is it a love beyond self? That's probably a much better way of saying it. And that creates an endless graph where you could plot endless types of love. Is it natural from God, or did you generate it yourself? And is it of self? Or is it beyond self? And then you have that creates the matrix for divine love. There's some other divine love, so I think that's enough for now. I think everybody's had their kalim expanded enough to right now. So that's Ivan Demalka. Just as a very, very quick summary, Ivan Demalka, the limbs of the king, shows Hashem's relationship to the mitzvahs, as in they are the closest thing to him. The actual act of the mitzvah, the closest thing to him, but not him himself. Yeah, he's enclosed in them like we are enclosed in our body. And then the four types of love, the four primary types of love that create this matrix is Ahava Rabbah, which is a love that comes from God, which is comparable to the love between a man and his sister. It's just there and it's the same. They are the same. Ahavas Olam, which is a self-generated love, which is comparable to a man and his wife. Then we've got kibbora d'shtado achrei avoi v'imoi, like a son, which is a beyond self love, a love beyond self, which is analogized by the son's love for his parent, which is actually the older child looking after his elderly parent and nursing him to the end. And then nafshi v'sicha b'layla, a love that I long for, like I thirst for my life. Yeah, that is comparable to a man and his child, and that is a self love, a love of self, and that's very dynamic and it causes us to everything. We have all of those experiences within our relationship, with the Rabbeinu Shlom. We love him because that's just a Jew that's given from above. Then we love him because we work on it and we daven, and that's the ikkar. That's the ikkar. That's why it's called avodah shebelev, because that's the ikkar avodah of shacharis, is avos oilam, is coming to that, and coming to that. That's what we say. That's the machlokes. We say avos oilam for ara rabba. Why? What? That's a very deep machlokes on why we say that by Birchas Kriyas Shema. And then we have a love of that is beyond self, legamrei, which we would give our life up for God without any thought of gain. And then we have the nafshi v'sicha, which is that dynamic, powerful love that gets us to wake up early in the morning, that gets us to, to really exert ourselves and to sweat for the Ribbono shel Olam. And all of those, all of them are absolutely essential in our relationship with the Ribbono shel Olam. Okay. Shkoyach. Any questions?